And welcome to In the Moment. I'm Steve Zwemke. What were the top news stories of 2019? What lies ahead for the next legislative session in Pierre? And what is South Dakota's congressional delegation saying about the situation between the U.S. and Iran? It's our first Dakota political junkies get-together of the new year, and we welcome Michael Card, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of South Dakota. He's joining us today from the Kirby Family Studio in Sioux Falls. Welcome. Glad you made the trip. Good to see you, Mike.
I'm glad to be here. Thanks,
John. Happy New Year to you, yeah. And with us by phone is Sioux Falls Argus Leader, investigative reporter, and columnist Jonathan Ellis. Jonathan, it was good to see you in the office before Christmas. I hope your holidays were good.
They were chaotic, Steve. The years were good, too.
Well, holidays are always chaotic, aren't they?
They are.
To be expected. Well, let's begin with something that was very chaotic in 2019, and that is what we've kind of come with as a consensus for our top news story of 2019. And, Jonathan, I'll let you get us started there.
Well, I mean, in South Dakota, I think certainly the biggest story was just weather. I hate to be so broad. To say that, but when you have, you know, extreme flooding events, multiple extreme flooding events at different parts of the year, you have what was the state climatologist saying this was the wettest year in state history statewide. It was certainly in Sioux Falls. It was the wettest year in Sioux Falls, and that beat last year's record, which had been the wettest year. So we're definitely in a very sustained period of wet weather, and here again locally, Sioux Falls, we were hit with three tornadoes. Mm-hmm. Burke was hit with a tornado, and so, you know, you have the weather, but, you know, the cascading effects of that then go into policy and politics. So you had just vast stretches of agriculture land that just was not planted this year. That affects everything, you know, tax revenues, which then affects. Goes into probably in some extent the governor's budget, which as we know, maybe we'll talk about, but doesn't include raises for state employees, and you know, so these things have a cascading effect, and so I think that without a doubt, weather for me was that the biggest story of 2019.
You know, if I can add to that, I think even the fall rains were quite problematic because it delayed harvest and reduced the harvest. You couldn't get into the field. For corn and soybeans, especially in the southeast area of the state. So that reduced sales tax collections because they weren't sure that the farmers weren't sure they were going to be able to get into the fields to do the harvest. And that certainly reduced the local sales tax collections.
Not to mention that, Mike, but in Clay County, as well as up here in the Sioux Falls area, roads were a big issue. And China Lockett has done a series of stories for us about the tribal roads, how they were affected. Right. But in southeastern South Dakota, really affected in a bad way.
Well, and the Cheyenne River Reservation still has areas that it's virtually impossible to get to because the roads are completely wiped out. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you have different terrain in West River than you have here in the flatlands, the water collects to a larger amount, and it's gumbo. It sticks with you when it's wet, and it sticks with you when it's dry. Or you stick to it when it's wet, and it sticks to you when it's dry.
And Jonathan, I think the potholes we saw last year in Sioux Falls, I think some of those have started to come back with some of the ice and winter weather we've seen. Roads here were no treat either, were they?
No, you're definitely right. I've found myself sort of swerving again, mm-hmm. Like I was in the beginning of the year. And they did do a lot of work on, especially on Minnesota and some places. But yeah, there's no doubt. I mean, the most recent storm we had, which was you know, ice and slush that then froze. I mean, those have just sort of devastating effects on roads. You know, they get into, you know, little cracks, and next thing you know, the you've got yourself a big pothole. So that's going to be another interesting summer of fixing roads here in Sioux Falls.
Yeah, and around the state, without a doubt. How about other items for top news story of the year? Did we have anything else we wanted to add to the weather?
Well, I mean, I thought, you know, that we have Governor Kristi Noem who's sworn in, and of course that's historic for that reason. But then, of course, I think that we sort of got a taste of her governing style, yeah. And I think that was, and so we'll have that for the next 3 years. And so for me, you know, we got to see what she was like. So I think that was a top story during the legislative session. So, and we'll see more of that going into this legislative session.
And that leads us into what we wanted to go into next, things we're looking for in the 2020 legislative session. There was no increase for funding in education, nursing homes, state employees in the governor's proposed budget for 2021. Mike, where do you see the legislature going in handling these issues? Obviously, there's a little bit of pushback from residents here in South Dakota on some of those topics. Do you see the people in the legislature being able to maybe do something to help out the people?
Well, there are teachers in every district, and there are Medicaid providers in almost all districts. And I think those are the two that are probably the biggest omissions from Governor Noem's budget, and I expect there to be lots of pressure on the legislature either to shift the priorities of the governor or to either take more from reserves than what the governor has planned or to make cuts in other places. Governor Noem requested the agencies to tighten their belts a little bit. South Dakota has a pretty lean budget to begin with. It hasn't had in real dollar that is inflation-adjusted dollars, an increase in 5 years or so. Mm-hmm. So we know that Medicaid providers are hurting. That's why we're seeing nursing homes close. They can't operate profitably on the level of reimbursement that they're getting from the state and or the federal government.
Jonathan, have you been in discussion with any of our state representatives or senators that will be in Pure for this session and how they'll address these issues?
I have spoken to some people who would suggest that the lawmakers, I think they got to come up with about what $15 million or so for that. The hope is that there will be money to address some of these issues, for pay raises and the like. Going back to the education issue and funding issue, I think the governor's office would probably push back a little bit, saying, "Well, there's certainly going to be increases for enrollment." And I think the governor's has touted her plan to increase money for special education. So I think they would push back a little bit to say, "Well, it's not like we didn't give anything." But I do think that lawmakers will make a big attempt to come up with money for some pay raises across not only for teachers but state employees. And in the past, even in the darkest days of the Great Recession, they did come up with, in terms of Medicare or Medicaid reimbursement, they did at least, when they had to make cuts, they made cuts in areas that could arguably afford it more. And they have come up with money for the nursing homes. And so I wouldn't be surprised to see them come up with additional funds in those areas.
Yeah. And Mike, while we're on the topic of education, early childhood education was big news out of the last legislative session. Very contentious. Obviously, that'll be part of this year's session as well.
Yes, and certainly it's one area that we know pays off is the earlier that you can get children ready to read, the more able they are to benefit from education, which then produces a better qualified citizen as well as someone able to work, whether it's in a skilled trade or whether it's in higher education or whether they decide not to forego those opportunities and go out on their own in an entrepreneurial spirit. It's the one area we know pays.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that we saw over the summer was legislative studies with respect to mental health services. There were five different legislative committees that met over the summer. So this will obviously be big on the docket for the 2020 agenda. Jonathan, will you speak on that, please?
Yeah, I mean, there will be efforts to, no doubt, to address mental health and then go back to the early childhood education. But at the end of the day, a lot of this comes down to money, and there's no money. So I think they're going to have to get kind of creative with how they, I'm kind of curious to see what kind of bills are come out of this on terms of mental health, because it's a huge issue that, touches everything from homelessness to violence. Republicans have always sort of fallen back on mental health. we need to address mental health issues as a fallback for any time there's some kind of gun incident, you know. And so it's, you know, let's see what you come up with. I mean, what do you, you know, let's see what your plan is for addressing some of these issues. But again, it all requires money, and there just doesn't seem to be a lot of money.
You know, in addition to, you know, speaking on the mental health issue, I think one of the issues that we have to deal with is the state's problem-solving courts, like drug courts and mental health courts, to try to get people who have conditions that prevent them from being a productive citizen in society, try to address those pre-existing conditions so that we don't have to incarcerate them. You know, these are individuals who have to admit responsibility for their actions. Their sentence is suspended, given that they seek treatment and make behavioral changes. And without money to fund the treatment, it's not clear how those are going to work, because the mental health treatment is, again, more effective than group work.
There are a lot of good ideas out there right now, too, and it's really a great time for innovation when we talk about mental health care. So it would be there will be some very interesting discussions. Let's move on to State of the Tribes. This has been very contentious in the news quite a bit over the last few days. And, Jonathan, it looks now like there may be a separate address called, I believe, the Great Sioux Nation Tribal Address, which would be something different this year, other than what the Tribal Relations Secretary has done.
Yeah, it's actually kind of a fluid event, or fluid situation here, but you have several, I think five tribes that had said they were going to boycott the address that was, that the legislature had invited Dave Flute to give instead of one of the tribal chairmen. Mm-hmm. And so you had some of them, some of the tribal members, you know, say that they were going to boycott and do this other address. Most recently, I think that the legislature invited the Crow Creek Sioux Tribe chairman to go ahead and give the address now, Lester Thompson. And so I think they are still planning. What I've most recently seen is that they're still planning to have the separate Great Sioux address, but they're going to do that after at a different time. So it sounds like maybe this issue might be resolved.
Yeah. Jonathan Ellis, investigative reporter and columnist with the Sioux Falls Argus Leader, and Mike Card, associate professor of political science at the University of South Dakota, are our political junkies today, our Dakota political junkies. Mike, in addition to the topic of the secretary giving that address every year, the State of the Tribes address, do you know if there's anything else that's underlying as to why the tribes might want to break off and do their own thing here?
Well, they certainly want to be heard, and they want to have relations with the state. There's a unique relationship between tribal governments that are recognized by the federal government, Department of the Interior, and the states. Essentially, for the land that is specifically a tribal reserve set aside back in the 19th century, mm-hmm. To open land for homesteading, certain land was reserved for the tribes. They are political entities that coexist or are co-located within the state, but the state only has jurisdiction in those areas over which Congress has specifically given them jurisdiction. So we have to find a way to work together between the tribes and the state, and we ignore each other at our peril.
President Trump spoke this morning about last night's strikes by Iran at American bases in Iraq, and his speech was very brief.
Okay.
He didn't take questions during the speech. We covered it live here on SDPB Radio. Our congressional delegation, before today's speech, had spoken about their feelings on what's going on between the U.S. and Iran right now. Congressman Dusty Johnson is one that said he may be a little uneasy about the president's strikes against Soleimani without contacting Congress, whereas both of our senators are a little more okay with what Trump had done. Jonathan, let me start with you and Dusty Johnson and what he had to say. Do you see that as being something that he's really concerned with, or maybe just kind of saying that right now to kind of appease the masses?
Well, I mean, I think, you know, lawmakers, the legislative branch is supposed to be its own branch of government. And, you know, so I think that, you know, and I've heard Republicans and Democrats complain about it, that the executive has gotten too strong and they've ceded too much of their authority. And so I'm not surprised that Dusty would say that. I mean, it was very, if you want to say, I wouldn't take it as a criticism necessarily of what Trump did. In fact, I think, you know, other than that, I mean, I think the congressional delegation, including Dusty Johnson, has been fairly supportive of what the president has done, and probably given the outcome of what we know at least so far, and what Iran is claiming to be the great revenge, which turns out to be not very much, if that's all it is, then I think that you will see certainly even more uniform support, from the congressional delegation for what the president did.
One of the things that Senator Rounds brought up was the fear of cyber attacks from Iran. And Mike, Senator Rounds heads one of the committees where it concerns cyber activity. He has been to Dakota State University several times. We've talked to him privately about some of the things that he has seen in the cyber world. This is a definite thing to concern ourselves with. Has Iran been known to attack with in the cyber world in the past?
They are quite capable of attacking in the cyber world. Yeah. You know, and militarily, Iran really doesn't stand a chance against the United States forces. Mm-hmm. Their missile attack overnight was showing us some things that we hadn't seen them do. Mm-hmm. Of the missiles that they sent, several were very precisely targeted. So they have to choose another manner. And one of the manners that they've chosen was a result of was actually caused our attack to get rid of Soleimani. They have militias throughout the Middle East. But their real weapon is cyber attacks.
Yeah.
You know, as our Governor Janklow said, you don't have to be anywhere when you're on the internet. Now that's trackable and traceable, but their capabilities are quite strong in terms mm-hmm. of disrupting the United States and our institutions of government as well as commerce.
Those can come from anywhere in the world, can't they?
They really
yeah.
can.
Before we go, Jonathan, let me give this to you first. Tom Daschle, Senator Tom Daschle, and Senator Trent Lott, who seem to be kind of joined at the hip over the last few years. They were on Fox News last night, and Senator Daschle, formerly U.S. Senator from South Dakota, mentioned that he believes the articles of impeachment will move into the Senate within the next week. What are your thoughts on that? And also a little intrigue there over the last few days, the comments from John Bolton as well.
Well, I'm certainly Senator Daschle probably has the inside scoop that I don't have on the articles of impeachment with the House Speaker holding on to them over the holidays and what the strategy there may be. But, for me, it's kind of interesting. If you look back on what happened with the impeachment in 99 of President Clinton and how Republicans are sort of insisting that they go along with that same template and that, it's really interesting to see people who were on one side of the issue in 99 are now on the other side of the issue. And in 99, there was quite a bit of discontent about not being able to call witnesses during the trial. You had actually some of the House prosecutors were so mad at their fellow Republicans in the Senate because they felt they were caving on the witness issue. Henry Hyde called, said it was a good thing that his Republican counterparts in the Senate weren't at Valley Forge because they would have capitulated. So, it's interesting to see that the issues from then 20 years later play out the same kind of issues. It's just that the parties tend to be on opposite sides now.
Yeah, there are a lot of then and now videos that are appearing all over the internet. Mike, we were talking about this before we went on to the show, and you kind of said the same thing. Anything you'd like to add?
I think Jonathan's comment needs to be highlighted is what the charge is, what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Mm-hmm. A very partisan Ken Starr led a much longer investigation into President Clinton's crimes and misdemeanors that led to the impeachment. Certainly, I don't think any of us would say Robert Mueller was was a partisan. I think the other aspect is that this is going to be probably move forward slowly. Like Jonathan, I don't have any special knowledge of what Nancy Pelosi's going to do, but it also seems that the impeachment will forward to the Senate, probably not immediately given these events today. But it also appears that Iran is deciding not to be belligerent. We're going to decide not to be belligerent going forward. It'll be interesting to see how the U.S. allies that our president has called upon, who believed that the treaty was working with Iran, and I'm not sure they're going to go along with him. But that's part of the challenge of figuring out how the U.S. can both go it alone and go in with friends in an international manner. And we have yet to see a larger strategy for how we're going to deal with the Mideast politics.
Guys, I wish we had more time. We are out right now. Our Dakota political junkies have been Michael Card, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of South Dakota, and Jonathan Ellis, investigative reporter and columnist for the Sioux Falls Argus Leader. Gentlemen, thank you so much. We'll talk soon, okay?
Thanks, Steve.